As you know, as I think you were told some weeks ago, I spent altogether 20 years in the East. I spent most of them in India. I spent initially a couple of years as a wandering ascetic of a sort of Hindu-Buddhist type, one might say, in South India, just moving from place to place, staying here, staying there, meditating, studying, meeting famous teachers, and so on. This story, or this part of the story, some of you may know, is related in my volume of memoirs entitled The Thousand-Petaled Lotus. After that, I spent a year in Benares. In Benares, I was studying Pali and Abhidhamma and also logic. And finally, I spent 14 years in a place called Kalimpong. Kalimpong is in the foothills of the Himalayas, about 4,000 feet above sea level. It's sort of sandwiched in between Nepal to the west, Bhutan to the east, Sikkim to the north, and beyond Sikkim, of course, Tibet. And from where I was staying most or much of the time, I could see. I had a beautiful view of the snow peaks of the Himalayas. So there, in Kalimpong, I spent 14 years. But during all this time, during my stay in Benares, during my 14 years in Kalimpong, I kept in touch, very often just by letter, with various Indian Buddhist organizations. But though I kept in touch, I did not join any of them. I never became a member of any Indian Buddhist organization. I don't know quite why this was, but it seems as though at the time a sort of instinct held me back. I kept in touch, but I never joined. And I kept in touch with one organization in particular. And this was quite an old organization. It was quite big, at least by Buddhist standards. And it was quite well known, and in its day it had done quite a lot of good work for Buddhism in India in one way or another. So with this organization, I was mainly in touch. But I hadn't been in touch with it for very long before I started feeling quite dissatisfied with it. Not to say very dissatisfied. And the more I saw of it, the more dissatisfied I became. My dealings, both by letter and also from time to time in person, were mainly with the governing body of this particular organization, including the office bearers. That governing body consisted of about 40 different people. And before long I discovered that most of them were in fact not Buddhists. And this surprised me not a little. In those days, you might say, I was a little inexperienced, not to say naive, and I was rather surprised to find that the majority of the members of the governing body of this Buddhist organization were not even Buddhists. But anyway, I thought at first that it must be all right, that probably they were genuine sympathizers with Buddhism, even though they weren't actually Buddhists. But again, before long, I discovered that this was not the case. Very much to my dismay, I discovered that some members of that governing body had no sympathy, in fact, with Buddhism at all. One might even say that in some cases, they were actually hostile to it. But there they were, running the affairs of this Buddhist organization. So I started asking myself, well, how had this happened? Well, they were there running the affairs of this Buddhist organization because they'd been elected to that governing body. But then, how had they been elected? Well, they'd been elected at an annual general meeting. But how had they come to be present at that annual general meeting? Well, they were there because they were members, paid-up members of the organization. And how had they become members of the organization? Simply by paying a subscription. So this seems to me to be the root of the trouble, that these people had got where they were simply by paying a small sum of money, a subscription, plus, of course, a bit of string pulling. So this seems to me a very strange way to run a Buddhist organization. And no wonder it was not functioning very well. Now you might wonder why it was that people not really sympathetic to Buddhism should spend their time, should take the trouble of running the affairs of a Buddhist organization, even though that governing body met only once a month. Well, it seems to me, and after many years of experience, I think I know it very well, that there are some people who like to belong to organizations. They like to get on to governing bodies, whether religious or political or civic, social. They just like to get on to governing bodies and managing committees and so on, because it gives them a sort of feeling of power. They like to run things, and they don't mind very much what it is that they're running. The main thing is that they should be running it. And in the case of this particular organization, this particular Buddhist organization, there was another factor at work too. I've said that this particular organization was quite well known. It used to organize big public meetings, for instance, to celebrate the Buddha's birthday. And in India, public meetings are really very big. I don't know how things go in New Zealand. Probably if you get 10,000 people, you'd think it was quite a big meeting, quite a big public meeting. If you got 100,000, I suppose that would be considered very big. Whereas in India, 10,000 is nothing. You can have 100,000 people. You can have 500,000 people at a public meeting very easily indeed. So this particular organization used to organize public meetings of this sort. And they used to invite famous politicians and prominent businessmen to preside over these meetings, these religious meetings. So that if you were a member of the governing body, there you would be, sitting up on the platform with all these people. You'd get to know them, you'd bask, as it were, in their reflected glory. Not only that, getting to know them would be very useful to you, useful in your own political or your own business life. You might even get some favour in that way, because in India, after all, everything is done by personal influence. So this is what I saw happening in this Buddhist organisation. And it made me rather disillusioned with Buddhist organizations. And then, after 20 years in the East, I went back to England. And I thought things would be different there. So I spent 2 years working with the existing Buddhist organizations in England, mainly in London. But there I found things pretty much the same as in India, only, of course, on a very much smaller scale. I found plenty of non-Buddhists having quite a big say in the running of Buddhist organizations. And consequently, these organizations too were not functioning very well, at least not very well from the Buddhist point of view. In fact, they were functioning quite badly. So I decided that something has to be done. I decided that a new Buddhist organization would have to be started. An organization that would not be an organization. I'd already decided to remain in England because I saw that in England, in fact in the West generally, there was scope for a genuinely Buddhist movement. So I decided to start a new organization, a new Buddhist movement, a new spiritual movement in England. And this, of course, was what was eventually started as the FWBO and WBO.